On Tech News Today, HP is going to split into two companies. Lenovo is going to ship a giant smartwatch. Facebook is going to add payments to its Messenger app. And we're going to tell you all about it. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, October 6th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. And by Citrix ShareFile. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with Citrix ShareFile. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin, and good morning to you, Jason Howell.
Good morning. How's it going, sir?
It's going great. I guess it would be afternoon if you're in the East Coast, and good
which
morning
I am.
To you.
I'm firmly in the East Coast in here mind. In this technical
yes.
director chair.
Got to represent East Coast. And also with us today, because it's Monday, is Lindsay Turrentine. How are you, Lindsay?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Awesome. Doing great. Doing great. Now, we were talking before the show about Twin Peaks, which is coming back. They're bringing bringing back some sort of new version. I guess they're going to try to revive it on Showtime. And you said you weren't a fan and you didn't really watch it back in the 90s. I obsessed over that show and I'm kind of looking forward out of curiosity to see what they come back with.
Well, maybe that means it'll be better for me the second time around because I'm not poisoned by the original. Right. I can actually just enjoy it. You'll probably be sitting there being like, oh, that's not right. Oh, they didn't get that right. That's just not quite right. I can just enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, Twin Peaks had a rabid following. I was kind of like borderline. Like I watched some of it and I got into it, but I wasn't like obsessed like some of my friends were. But don't you think there's kind of a fear of that they're bringing back a show that has such a cult classic following to it that they could really just kind of tarnish
yeah.
the history?
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of problems. One is that it was such a shocker when it came out because they kept unraveling. It was sort of like Lost. They kept getting more and more bizarre and weird. And eventually there were aliens walking
right.
around in Colorado and stuff. And it was the quintessential 90s show. Was it 90s or 80s? I guess it was in the 90s, right?
Yeah, I think it was the 90s. Yeah.
And it just was a thing of its era, essentially. And I don't know how you do that nowadays. But anyway, we'll see how it goes. And hopefully it'll be at least entertaining, if not a faithful recreation of the original to a certain extent. Anyway, I really liked it.
90 to 91, by the way.
Oh,
there we go.
Wow.
Just had to make sure.
Didn't go
That's
very
a long.
Long
time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel old.
Yes.
Old.
It was so grunge back then.
Yeah. And hot.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into the news.
All
HP
right.
will break itself into two companies. One company will be called HP Inc., and it'll be made up from HP's current PC and printers businesses. The second company, to be called Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, will be based on HP's current corporate computing and IT services business. Eric Hesseldahl writes about enterprise computing for Recode. He wrote a series of articles about this split. And welcome to you, Eric Hesseldahl.
Good morning.
Now, why is HP doing this, and why didn't Meg Whitman do this 3 years ago?
Well, in a way, you can argue that it's returning to the plan that Meg's predecessor, Leo Apotheker, floated in 2011 and was part of what cost him his job. But what's happening here is the PC and printing group is basically being combined into one company. It's going to be called HP Inc., or HPI for short, is what I'm going to start calling it. And then a second company of which Whitman will be CEO, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, so HPE, so HPI and HPE. If you want to be specific. And that's the one that's going to focus on corporate computing. It's got the networking division, the storage division, server division. It's the largest supplier of computer servers for cloud computing data centers and so forth. So that is what's going to happen. It's going to take a year. It is a profoundly complex corporate exercise to separate two large companies or one large company into two. There's almost certainly going to be some job losses in addition to the 55,000 that have already been announced as of today. So we're going to have a lot of questions about this in the coming year.
Now, Eric, this seems to me a lot like what happened with IBM so many years ago now when it split from Lenovo was sold off. Do you see that kind of radical change happening here over the coming years?
Well, it's interesting. The Lenovo example is actually telling, partially because in that particular case, IBM was neither a market leader in personal computers. And again, by the way, they sold their server division, their x86 server division, to Lenovo just recently. So basically a repeat of that. So it raises an important point, though, because Hewlett-Packard's technology is essentially commodity technology. It makes PCs that are only marginally different from those that Dell and Acer and Asus make. Its servers are, with one key exception, undifferentiated in most respects from servers that are made by Dell and other companies that make servers. So that's where the big question really lies. HP hasn't really pushed the envelope on the technical front. It has essentially been a volume play. If you'll remember back in 2002, the big strategic change at Hewlett-Packard was the acquisition of Compaq. What it did was it made it a great big company that sold the same technology, the same stuff, the same PCs, the same servers, really nothing fundamentally different or meaningful or leading edge in any way. Going back even further than that, HP sold off a company called Agilent, which many people would still argue was the heart and soul, the innovative engineering soul of HP. And that's where the science and industry and technical instrumentation came out of. And it was the engineering-driven heart and soul of it. And so, and it still is an independent company today. But when we look at Meg and we look at the various examples of how HP has evolved, I think she gets a certain amount of credit for fixing the situation as she found it. And HP was a great big mess. It was a big heaping mess when she arrived in 2011. But now she's decided that it's better to split the companies in two and let them act on their own.
I think it's hilarious that the PC and printer business is going to be called HP Inc. because, of course, selling ink is going to be their main source of profits.
It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so who's going to lead these companies? What's the leadership going to shake out as?
Here's what we know so far. Meg will be CEO of HP Enterprise, but she will be chairman of HP Inc. The CEO of HP Inc. will be Dion Weisler. He's the current head of printing and personal systems, which is the large, you know, basically the large group that'll be, you know, the majority of the new company. And the chairman of HPE, HP Enterprise, will be Patricia Russo, who is HP's current lead independent director on its board of directors.
So in taking on, it seems like Meg is taking on the harder job, the sort of, we know that the ink supports that hardware business, and she's taking on the sort of more complex, more challenging, maybe has missed the boat so far part of the job. Is that your impression, or is that an easy way to put it?
I think that's an easy way to put it. It's a little more complicated than that. The enterprise is where the opportunity lies right now. The printing and personal computers are generally seen as declining businesses. The opportunity in the wider tech industry right now is very, very seriously in the enterprise. It's substantially more interesting for a startup perspective and from a venture capital perspective than anything that is consumer facing right now, with the possible exception of wearables. Enterprise is where it's at right now. It's where the business is. It's where all the profits are. It is substantially more profitable than anything, in theory, than anything that you can do in the consumer space. That said, HP needs to make some kind of a large combination and get itself growing. It hasn't shown any meaningful growth in any single one of its business units in the last 3 years. Now, Meg has been clear that growth wasn't really expected, but shareholders certainly expect it. So the main thing that she gets credit for is getting the balance sheet in shape, getting rid of a lot of the corporate debt, and basically getting HP as it is right now in something resembling fighting trim. But the next step is going to be an M&A deal. And I talked to her today. She basically said, I think you will see the HP Enterprise division, enterprise company, be active from an M&A standpoint. And I happen to believe, this is my opinion now, that the HP Inc., the consumer PC printing company, will probably be targeted for an acquisition, either in part or in whole, by someone else, perhaps a Dell, perhaps Lenovo.
It's kind of frustrating to me, and I think probably a lot of customers and users and observers of this kind of news, that HP spends all its energy buying and selling off parts and combining and recombining and now splitting and just messing around with the bits and pieces without, you know, why don't they focus on innovative products that are great products? That's easy for me to say. I know it's difficult to do with a gigantic organization. I think the number of employees is currently above 350,000 or something like that.
It's closer to 300,000 now.
You're right. It was at some point recently that high. Now, they've also been trying to sort of sell it for parts. Lenovo and Dell didn't want the PC business. Wipro and Infosys didn't want the enterprise services business. IBM didn't want the business critical server business. Why not? Why have they had such trouble unloading these units?
Well, and I've gotten a little bit of pushback from HP on some of this narrative, but I do know that they were shopping these units around. It's a little unclear whether the answer in the PC and printing division was quite the resounding no. But the fact of the matter is that HP went through this exercise in order to, I think partially in preparation for this moment, in order to try and get a market valuation on what the various business units were about. But I think also it always comes to terms. I mean, everything is for sale at the right price, and it's provided that both parties on either end of the table can reach an amicable and mutually agreeable price. So I don't know this to be a fact, but I've heard indications that HP had ideas about what certain assets were worth, specifically the PC unit, and they were higher than what the other parties might be willing to pay, specifically Dell and Lenovo. Now, we can go through all kinds of different mathematical exercises to figure out what they might be worth. There was some research on that today from Tony Saganaki at Stanford Bernstein. And so that's basically a paper exercise. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, you may very well see someone try to come in and upset the apple cart and maybe buy the PC division with a competing offer. You may see somebody try to come in and take out printing with a competing offer, maybe not printing so much. But contemplate, what would Dell and HP's combined market share in PC look like? It would be about 33%, roughly the same if it were Lenovo. So whoever would take it over would control basically one-third of the global market for PCs. That may make it a very tempting target. So I don't think we're done with this exercise and contemplating whether or not there's going to be an M&A move on this or that part of HP.
Eric Hesseldahl writes at Recode.net, and you can follow him on Twitter at AHESS247. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric Hesseldahl.
You bet. All right. You bet.
In just a sec, we're going to hear about the latest smartwatch, smartband, whatever it's called. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. You know, if you haven't noticed lately, there are a lot of really nice-looking websites out there. And if you've got an old and busted website, and if it's been around for 3 or 4 years, it probably looks somewhat out of date. It's time to leapfrog the best and most beautiful websites by using Squarespace. It's easy to do because they have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with. You can't miss with these templates. Every single one of them will give you a fantastically beautiful website, and Squarespace itself will give you a robust, high-performance website. You can use, of course, your own domain name, and if you have an existing blog, you can simply import your blog into your Squarespace blog and bring your domain name over, and your blog readers won't notice anything except the fact that your website has now been transformed into a modern, elegant, beautiful, high-performance website. Starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And, of course, it's famously mobile-ready. Their Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad lets you check site stats and essentially manage your site while on the go. And, of course, the blog app can do the same, let you manage your blog from a mobile device. Hosting, of course, is legendary, and it is included in the price. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT, and then I'll get you 10% off and also show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, Lindsay, it looks like Lenovo's getting into the smart something on your wrist racket. What's going on?
Lenovo might have its own wearable device really soon after its Lenovo Smart Band makes its way through the FCC, where it currently is awaiting approval. It's technically called, its model number is SWB100, and it's really kind of, quite frankly, nothing surprising. It alerts the wearer to incoming calls and monitors fitness, and it includes exercise, sleep, and heart rate monitoring. Brad Linder, who's the editor of Lilliputing, is here to talk about this new band. Brad, is there anything that sets this apart from all of the competition?
Not really. I think it's more a question of everybody's looking at the wearable space as possibly the next big play in consumer electronics. Because, you know, everybody's got the laptop if they want one, everybody's got the smartphone if they want one, what else can we convince people they need? And in some ways, the general purpose smartwatch, which is a device which, you know, could sell for $200-$300, the Apple smartwatch is going to sell for over $350, is a risky move because people have already spent a lot of money on their other gadgets. So I think the dedicated fitness tracker, which is really more what this is an interesting play. I've been wearing one of these little fitness trackers on my belt for the last year or so. It's helped me stay in shape just by keeping me motivated, giving me an opportunity to track how much exercise I've been getting during the day. And I think a lot of people are doing that. It's not as mass market appeal kind of product. I don't think everybody's going to be into the fitness tracker, but you can make these devices a little bit more affordable than something like the Apple Watch or the Samsung Galaxy or Samsung Gear 2 or these other things that cost hundreds of dollars. We don't know how much Lenovo's version is going to cost yet. They haven't officially announced this product, but as you mentioned, it showed up at the FCC, and as a lot of devices do, before the official announcement, you can go to the FCC website, click a bunch of links and see pictures of it, read the user manual and get a sense for how it's going to work. This particular one is designed to be worn around your wrist. It tracks steps. It has a heart rate monitor, which won't monitor your heart rate constantly, but it'll allow you to periodically check and see, you know, is your heart rate elevated after a good workout, after you've gone for a run or done something else. And it's water resistant. It's not really designed, I don't think, for going swimming, but you should be able to wear it in the shower, wear it when you're getting sweaty and do some other activities like that. So I think it looks like a decent entry. As I mentioned, we don't know the price yet. My guess is that it's the sort of thing that would sell for around $100 or less. And if that's true, it looks competitive. I don't know if it looks particularly special other than the fact that it might be Lenovo's first wearable.
Yeah.
They're also looking at other wearables, but this might be the first one to market.
One thing that elevates my heart rate is the idea that you mentioned in your article that it could get 7 days of battery life. Any idea how they might achieve that? That's seven times better than existing smartwatches, pretty much.
Well, it's better than smartwatches, but again, the device I sort of flashed here, this is called a Withings Pulse. It's got a little OLED display, and you'll notice that it's not actually on right now. You have to click a button to make it go on. And so most of the time, it's going to be off. You can wear it for days at a time and not ever actually have to look to see how many steps you've taken because it synchronizes that data with your phone. So it's possible that Lenovo's watch or smart band could have something similar where it's a display where if it were on a lot, it would die quickly. But if it's staying off most of the time and it doesn't run a complex operating system like Android Wear, you know, it might be able to run for a long time, even with a color display or an OLED display, or it could have an e-paper display. There's just not enough information in the in there for us to tell. Now, it does synchronize with your phone via Bluetooth, and there is mention in the user manual of showing notifications. So it might be able to do a few things that my little Withings Pulse can't, such as buzzing when there's an alarm that goes off. You can set alarms either on the device or on your phone, or buzzing or flashing to give you caller ID when somebody is making a phone call. So it's a little smarter than just a fitness tracker, but it's not going to include maps. It's not going to let you order a pizza from your watch. It's not going to do a lot of the things that you can do with a multi-purpose device like a Gear Live or a LG G Watch.
So reminders seems to be part of this that keeps cropping up in the manual and in your piece. What kinds of reminders could this band specialize in? It seems to be sort of part of what might make it a little bit different.
Right. So in addition to giving you reminders, if you set an alarm saying it's time to wake up, you can, it seems to have, the user manual mentions the ability to remind you to hydrate. So while you might get reminders from some fitness watches or fitness bands or other activity trackers saying, you know, have you met your goals today? Have you done 10,000 steps? This one also seems to tell you when it's time to drink a bottle of water.
Wow. Well, Brad Linder writes at bradlinder.com and also lilliputing.com. Is that the correct URL for that?
Lilliputing.com.
And you can follow him on Twitter at Brad Linder. Thanks for joining us, Brad.
Thanks for having me.
Facebook Messenger contains hidden code for a payments feature that would enable users to send money to each other. The feature is complete. All Facebook has to do is turn it on, according to a report in TechCrunch. The code was first discovered by security researcher Jonathan Ziarski last month using an iOS app exploration developer tool. Lindsay Turrentine, this sounds like kind of a bold move for Facebook. I think it was hinted at by Mark Zuckerberg at various points, saying that the Messenger apps that Facebook would offer would contain this, but I don't think we expected the code to already be in place. Pretty cool. But do you think people, A, want to use Facebook Messenger for exchanging money, and B, do you think people trust Facebook with their money?
B, no, I don't think that people will necessarily trust Facebook with their money, just because I think that there's a lot of mistrust of Facebook in general out there. But to back to your A question, will people use it? I think yes, because over and over again, we see that users, in many cases, convenience trumps security in the end. And I know that despite all the resistance to, say, Facebook Messenger, I have a lot of friends who still use it and rely on it because it is easy. They already know all their friends are there, and it's right there. And if you're talking about planning an event and you're getting together with your friends for a dinner out and you need to settle the bill, you've already been talking on Facebook about the event. It's a pretty seamless, it could be a very seamless way to make that payment.
Yeah, and it is easy, like you say. Apparently, sending money is just like sending a photo. You just click on a little icon, and then, you know, and this is after you've entered your debit card. Right now, credit cards and bank account numbers are not included in the code that enables you to get, you know, access your money. So this is essentially a way to transfer the debit activity from one debit card to another. It's unknown whether Facebook will charge a fee, although my guess is that they would be nuts not to, because they will be charged a fee for these kinds of transactions by the financial institutions. And, you know, essentially Facebook's trying to compete against WhatsApp, iMessage, WeChat Line, Hangouts, Kick, all these other messaging applications, and they're all kind of scrambling. In Asia, you know, this kind of commerce, there's a lot of commerce built into messaging apps. It's kind of a standard feature in a lot of the ones that are popular in Asia. So I think this is kind of an inevitable point of differentiation from Facebook proper. I mean, this is one of the reasons maybe why Facebook spun it out and kind of requires you to use Messenger. They really want to drive usage of the Messenger app before they roll this out with a big splashy rollout so that people will take to it. But, you know, I think it's an interesting development. But really, I think Lindsay Turrentine, I think this is going to become something of a banality. I think we're getting to the point where everything from your watch to multiple apps will just allow you to pay for stuff. And it's not going to be that exciting in like a couple of years.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's exciting right now. There isn't that whole infrastructure isn't totally built out yet. I think everybody's sitting around waiting for it to be built out, at least in the US. And it'll be interesting to see how quickly it gets adopted. I kind of hope that it's that easy in a couple of years. It would make life a lot simpler. And I think right now people really struggle with PayPal as their sole solution for this. And it's not always easy to use at all.
That is true. And while everybody's adding features to messaging applications, Microsoft is removing one from Skype, at least in India.
That's right. So as of November 10th, Skype will no longer make calls from within India to handsets and landlines in India. So it's always been against the law to make IP calls from within India to other devices. And Skype and other companies who do this have sort of gotten around it by routing those calls internationally. So they'd actually route them to outside of India and then back into India. Skype is no longer going to be doing this, although it will still allow PC to PC calls from within India, and it will still allow calls for people traveling outside of India into India. It's not quite clear why they've made this change, but it seems to be having to do with wanting to comply with what the Indian government wants.
It also could involve complying with what the carriers in India want. I mean, Microsoft is really trying to build up its Windows phone business. India is a gigantic potential market for Microsoft. And, you know, I have this sneaking suspicion, based essentially on nothing other than it would make sense strategically, that Microsoft is kind of buttering up the carriers by saying, look, we're not going to use Skype to compete with you anymore. We'll force people to use landline phones. We won't let people use Skype to do those kinds of connections. And so, you know, that could be one reason why they're doing that sort of thing. But
yeah, that makes a ton. That's a very smart read on that. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And one of the interesting things about this is that other VoIP carriers like Viber haven't made these announcements and haven't made any changes in the way they conduct business in India. So if that changes, then I would look more to a sort of a government crackdown on these practices, but we haven't heard that yet.
Well, in just a minute, we're going to give you some follow-ups, including a follow-up of a downloading service that's being shut down. But first, I want to tell you about Citrix ShareFile. Here's the deal. If you send attachments to email, people always think, well, my email is secure. I'm using two-factor authentication. There's no way that my email is going to be hacked. Well, guess what? If you send that file to five other people, you're relying on their security for the security of that file. And if you have sensitive information, financial information, personal information, any sort of information that you don't want random hackers to get their hands on, then you need to use ShareFile. The reason is that you upload the file into a secure place in the cloud, and then you send a link. And that link can only be opened and used by the people you say during the amount of time that you say. And when they do download it, you can be notified that they have downloaded it. This is a big time saver as well. But the biggest reason, you know, we cover security story after security story. There's so much hacking going on, and you always find out about it when it's too late. There's just nothing at all secure about adding an attachment to email, so don't do it for any of your files. It's just a bad habit. Use Citrix ShareFile. It's easy to use, it's fun to use, and it's even appealing to use because it's a really beautifully designed site. So I highly, highly recommend ShareFile. Get started today with our 30-day free trial. Just go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter TNT. That's ShareFile.com, and enter TNT. Verizon plans to shut down its Redbox instant streaming video service tomorrow. The service combined Outer Wall's Redbox DVD rental kiosks with a Verizon streaming video service. The companies admitted failure and are cutting their losses. In other news, some guy named Corbin Davenport got Microsoft Windows 95 running on an Android Wear watch. He used an Android DOS emulator called a DOSBox, then installed Windows 95 on top of that, which make the operating system boot on his Samsung Gear Live smartwatch. Unfortunately, launching any Windows application caused an immediate crash because of insufficient memory. You going to do this immediately? You've got a Samsung Android Wear watch, Jason.
Yeah, it's kind of out of order because of the horrible charging mechanism that completely snapped off of the watch after like a week's worth of wearing. Don't get me wrong. This looks like a beautiful implementation of Windows 95 and would totally make anyone happy in operation. But I probably am not going to do this.
Yeah, Lindsay Turrentine is perfect for reading that ebook or whatever. That screen is just. I love the fact it's that he's glorious. Like actually there's a tiny little mouse pointer like in the screen. It just.
Yeah.
Super.
Just why it's amazing that you can even read those menus. It's hysterical. I love it.
Exactly. Well, I am really enjoying the ongoing coverage of the Apple Spaceship Campus. We're going to see this thing rising very, very fast. We've got some new footage. This is by far the best drone footage we've had. Now, we showed you some pictures or some video, I think, last week, and they've laid a huge amount of concrete in a very short amount of time. What we're looking at there is those squares are support structure. All of that stuff is underground, so that what looks like the roof of the structure is actually the floor, the ground level, and everything that you see dug in is actually below ground level. So
wow, this is crazy. So owner of this drone footage, do we know, like, does he have to get Apple's permission in order to do this, or?
First of all, it's illegal, and second of all, right. Apple would not grant,
I'm pretty sure,
they would not grant permission. So that's why they're using drones. I mean, they have to just sort of, do it in stealth mode. And you notice there was nothing going on. They did this, on Sunday when nobody's working or something.
Right,
there was no
right.
activity. So somebody's going to get arrested. Something's going to happen, and we will cover it when it does. Well, Canon, here's an interesting story. Canon's going to announce something tomorrow at 9 a.m. Pacific, just an hour before this show begins. And they're calling it something that's impossible. They put up this cryptic countdown timer, and they posted it on their site, and they say, this message goes out to fear, doubt, logic, and reason. So whatever they're going to announce has no logic or reason behind it, apparently.
Wow, that's quite a marketing push.
Yeah. So
I mean, I'll watch.
Yeah.
They got me. They got me.
They're probably going to announce a film camera.
Well.
Our TNT fan of the day is Jeff Grave, who lives in nearby Pleasanton, California, but who took this picture in Wailea, Hawaii. Wow, look at that. Living the life.
Awful.
There.
He's just trying to make us jealous.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
So. Jerk.
Wow,
I feel like we're on vacation with him. That's very lovely. Well, How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of your setup and post it on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. That is the Tech News Today. Lindsay Turrentine and Jason Howell. What a show. This is really awesome. We did a whole show. I think this is a new thing. We did a whole show, and there wasn't a single security breach story. Not one.
Wow. And nothing about China.
Yes. Yeah. China's been very quiet, I guess. So, Lindsay, what are you working on these days? Can you give yourself a quick plug?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we have some exciting stuff coming up in a couple of months that I'll be able to talk about then. But we are working on making sure that everybody knows exactly what's going on in consumer electronics over at CNET.com.
Somebody's got to. So we thank you for that on behalf of the entire gadget enthusiast community. See you next week.
Bye.
All right. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS, so many options. Choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT. You'll see two little drop-down menus, one's for audio, one's for video. You can choose high def, whatever you want, right there on that site, twit.tv/TNT. Follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter name is Tech News Today. You can even follow us on Elo. Tech News Today is our Elo name. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. Send us email to tnt@twit.tv. You can call us at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can leave a message. Nobody's going to answer the phone. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.